parents are really concerned these days about that their teens are taking too long to grow up, and it's not really that kids are taking too long, but that they're taking longer than in the past. The Institute of Marriage and Family Canada did a study on this recently. They've released those findings. We're going to talk a bit about them. Derek Miedema from the Institute of Marriage and Family joins us on the line from Ottawa to talk a bit about this study. Good morning, Derek.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So let's start off the top. This report, this study is called Growing Up Then and Now, Cohabitation Marks the Key Difference. And you go through four major, points and milestones in growing up. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can run us through those four first, and then we'll take a closer look at them.
Sure. I looked at the four markers being starting work, leaving home, having kids, and getting married or living common law. And I looked at those because those are major markers that have been looked at over the over the last 100 years or so. And you can understand that parents looking at their children growing up want them to find their own place, be able to have a stable home life, be able to have a find a career that's stable, and be able to have a relationship that's stable. So I looked at all of those, and there have been age changes from the 70s in terms of how long kids are taking today, but if we go back to the early 1900s, they're taking largely the same amount of time as people, as adolescents in the early 1900s in most of these markers.
Do we know, because I'm looking at, I've got it here in front of me, and I was a bit amazed. You just assumed that it would be younger and younger, but what was going on then, do you think, in the 1900s that contributed to kids staying home longer?
Well, I imagine this wasn't a real strong. I didn't specifically look at that, but I would imagine that that kids would be more likely to stay home, would be more likely to stay home until they got married, to
right,
leave home at the point of marriage, or to leave home at the point where they. Got good work.
Cohabitation was probably not the thing in those days, I suppose.
No, and that's a big reason as to why I highlighted in this report. You look at all these markers, people, although there's been changes in these areas, and although it is a much different world today, when we look at the ages at which people are going through these very various markers, people are still leaving home, they're still getting a job, they're still having kids. People are still getting married, but more and more people are either delaying marriage or living together instead of getting married. So that's been the huge change.
And what does that mean for people in your study? What is there have been a lot of studies, there have been books, documentaries about children, basically teenagers and young adults not growing up, still being very much irresponsible, not taking responsibility for their own lives. How does cohabitation, living with someone, affect someone's development?
Well, I think we can see that borne out, and I don't say that this characterizes all cohabiting relationships, but one difference that I see, if you're going to choose to get married and have a public ceremony, you're obviously making a conscious choice in order to even, book the space that you need to do it, whether it's in a courthouse or in any other place, and you're making a public statement. If it happens that a couple is spending a lot of time together, they're living in two separate houses, it's evidently cheaper for rent to share a spot than to pay for two. So if they decide on the basis of it'd be cheaper to live together, let's move in. They haven't so much made a conscious choice to, spend the next spend the rest of their lives together, or even to work to spend a good chunk of it together. They've decided that it's cheaper to live together. So where people are sliding into living together and sliding into the next stages of relationship, that's a less conscious choice. That's it's not as much of a solid decision that you make, and I think that that just delays. It also comes back to the fact that, research shows, Statistics Canada research shows that cohabiting relationships, first relationships that are common law, are twice as likely to break up than first relationships that are married. And that being the case, you're basically extending the period of your life where you're looking for a stable relationship. And you're bringing all these decisions, you're extending the lifetime of all these decisions in terms of who you're going to live with, whom you're going to spend your time with. You're extending that farther out by going through one, two, three, or multiple cohabiting relationships,
Sorry to interrupt you there. I wanted to focus on that a little bit. Are we talking about people who live together and then get married are more likely to get divorced, or is it just common law couples are more likely to split than couples that are married, whether they live together or not?
Well, both. If you live together and don't get married, you're twice as likely to break up as someone who got married. And if you live together and then get married, it makes no difference. The same likelihood applies.
Do we have the numbers? What is this? Is it statistically significant?
Well, it is. It is significant. 2001 numbers, age in 2001 from Statistics Canada again, so I have a problem with the statistics apparently.
it's a Friday morning.
Yeah.
You're
looking for people at their age in 2001, whether they're, you know, these are likely a probability of women to separate 50 to 59 years, 40 to 49, and 30 to 39 years, all of those age brackets almost twice as likely to break up if you're living common law. Compared to if you're living together married.
Do we know why? Did your study look into why? What sort of conclusions can we draw from that?
Well, again, it's borne out again and again and again in the stats that cohabiting relationships are less stable. Again, I think one of the reasons, and I don't have, you know, no study can say I have all the answers,
right.
But the research does point to where that it's termed as sliding, what I spoke about of moving in together because it's cheaper, where you're sliding from one stage to another. That could mean that if a couple moves in together, it could be theoretically, of course, the woman in the relationship thinks it's going to be, think that's a step towards marriage. The guy thinks it's just a cheaper living situation and still spends as much time hanging around with his buddies. And so you ended up being on a different page that way. And, if you bring children into the situation, it can be in a cohabiting relationship that it can be these major markers that bring a person to step back and say, if I really had my druthers, is this the person that I would want to spend the rest of my life with? But now that we're sharing a house, now that we have a kid together, it looks like I better try to make a go of it. And in any relationship, obviously, whether you're talking marriage or common law, but in any relationship where you're going into it thinking this may not work, that doesn't bode as well for the long-term prospect of that relationship.
So you're basically saying that there's less certainty in the cohabitation than, say, the marriage.
Well, certainly less certainty in terms of the level of commitment, the level of decision making, I should say. Again, not speaking in generalities.
Right.
Stepping back and looking at the statistics, not trying to cast aspersions on anyone who's mm-hmm. living common law, but where that level of commitment is lower, and where the strength of decision, consciousness of the decisions is lower in common law relationships. That means that there does tend to be a lower level of commitment. If it is a relationship, for example, where we may have a fight, but we both know in a common law relationship that if it gets too bad, one of us is free to leave.
Right.
Then that, by its very nature, is less of a stable relationship than a marriage relationship.
I wanted to ask you. There are obviously long-term, as you said, you don't want to cast aspersions on anyone. There are cohabitation couples who have cohabitated for years and years and never got married, and they're very happy. Is there a maturity issue to this, do you think? Do you maybe mature a little bit more if you live on your own than, say, with someone when you leave home?
Well, I'm not getting it at a maturity level. Again, I'm looking at the stability issue.
Right.
In terms of the stability of the relationships, no, I mean it's not a maturity issue. I think certainly that when anyone who finds themselves in a married relationship and knows you're going to have to work out big changes. So, as a single guy moving into a married relationship, you're going to have to work out with your better half how the relationship's going to work, and that's going to require some changes. And if you have kids, that's going to require some changes to a certain amount. That does also happen in cohabiting relationships, but again, given that the relationship tends to be so much less stable, that it's more, you know, it's not as likely, it is more likely that that a couple may choose to break up as things get too bad. Now, you know, I would almost say in terms of, certainly I appreciate the fact, actually, that there are cohabiting couples out there who have lived together for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. The exception, I would say two things, I guess. The exception doesn't mean that the rule changes, doesn't mean that the stats aren't lying, but I would also actually say that, boy, if we celebrate, you know, 50 years of marriage, I would say congratulations for living together for that long.
Yeah, I guess so. Now, is there a social policy aspect to this? Is there a social policy your group would like to see enacted on this front? Or
do you mean in terms of laws?
Well, maybe tax breaks for married couples that as opposed to common law. Is there anything that your organization would like to see done on that front? Or
well, the rub of this paper, first of all, the rub of this paper is that. Speaking you generally, of course, but if a person aspires to have a lifelong relationship with one partner, living common law is going to hurt your chances. So at least if you're going to choose to live common law, go in knowing the reality of the nature of the relationship, where people think that moving in together before getting married is going to help them figure out what it's like to live together and whether they can. It seems counterintuitive, but the stats show that it's more likely to lead to relationship breakup. You know, not with respect to cohabitation versus marriage, but one policy that we do advocate for is income splitting.
Right.
What income splitting means, like we know from studies that that we've done. That if you have two families living side by side, one family dual earners $35,000 apiece, the other family single earner $70,000, the single earner family is going to pay about $4,000 more in income tax.
Right.
And so from that aspect, we encourage the government to look at different ways that they can, you know, close that gap or narrow that gap.
Now, maybe you can tell our listeners where they can, if they're interested, your website, where they could find more on this study.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find this study on our homepage at www.imfcanada.org.
Derek, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us to talk about the study this morning.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Derek Miedema from the Institute of Marriage and Family.